Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a balance that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. This is episode number, wait for it, milestone day 275. This is Stephen Zimmer coming to you live out of Lexington, Kentucky. And yes, folks, you get a treat tonight because for a little bit I'm going to be solo, hosting solo tonight. So who knows what I'm going to talk about or bring up, but it is going to be a great open mic night. And I do want to give a shout out to our guest of last week, Pete Fry, and his great band Far Cry. That song, their new intro music from the song Balance, and that is something all indie artists strive for. So, yes, great intro. Thank you to the guys for letting us use the song and getting underway. So it begins, as Tommy B says. Yes, and Sandy Lander's in there. And, yes, Sandy, I have a treat for you tonight. Of course, in addition to your awesome spot, it's going to be a cool night. Yeah, we're going to do open mic tonight. So jot down this phone number if you don't see it already. It is the same guest call-in number that's on our show page, 619-639-4616. Again, 619-639-4616. And that is the call-in number, and I'll be taking calls just shortly after we get through our sponsors tonight. But definitely excited to be here tonight, celebrating a milestone, of course, with episode 275. And definitely wanting to take a break from my long day of working on words. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of editing work today and whatnot, and definitely in, getting back in the groove, so to say. And Holly does send along her greetings to everyone. She is actually, unfortunately, having to recover from yet another hell ride to Indiana to take care of some family stuff. And so, yeah, Holly's just not catching a consistent break here, so I'm giving her one tonight. And definitely also keep your thoughts out for Daniel Dark's mother. She had to go into the hospital earlier this evening. That's why Daniel will not be on co-hosting with us tonight. RG, however, will be joining us in progress, RG Westerman. But definitely keep Daniel in your thoughts and prayers with his mother. And hopefully they, you know, find out what's going on and take care of her very swiftly, and she gets better very quick. So that's a bit of a dour note, but definitely keep him and her in your thoughts and prayers. So yeah, you're stuck with me for just a little bit. And hi, Carol Preflatish. Good to see you. And be seeing you, I think, in a couple weeks here. Because I think, I'm not sure, are you going to be going to the Kentuckiana Authors Fair in LaGrange, Kentucky? I believe it's August the 14th. This is a great project put on by Tony Acree of Hydra Publications. Always enjoy it. One-day event. Definitely a lot of fun. Very very good vibe there. And a wide diversity of writers, a lot of different offerings. Really a really fun day, and I'm going to be promoting that more heavily next week and then the week but hopefully we'll get to see you there at LaGrange. And I always want to play that ZZ Top song every time we bring up LaGrange, because, you know, your classic ZZ Top tune. And I usually end up annoying Tony by either posting a YouTube of it on his page or sending it to him in a private message. But yeah, we need to somehow make that the theme song for that festival, just because it fits. And, you know, you got a great band like ZZ Top with a great song like LaGrange, and it's LaGrange, Kentucky, and that's the best reason I can give you for why we should put all that together. So it's definitely be a good thing. And no, I did not hear that. Oh, gosh. From chat room, I guess Sandy Lender said that the bass player for ZZ Top actually passed today. So I did not know that. I'm definitely going to have to look that up. And that is awful, awful news, because they were just had completed or on the verge of completing a new album. I think it was completed, and they're getting ready to go out and do a tour, I think, in the fall and so forth. And that's absolutely awful news. And, geez, well, you know, let's try to get some good news here. Definitely sorry to hear that, Sandy. And we'll definitely hopefully get some good news going here. And 275 episodes, that's a bit of a jaunt in podcast terms. So we originally had done kind of a biweekly schedule, and then we morphed into a weekly schedule. So this covers more than a five-year period. I mean, I have to do my diligence and actually look up when our first date of the show was, but it was much more than 5 years ago. And so, yeah, we've come a long ways. And here at 275, it's definitely going strong, and definitely appreciate the audience. I definitely get notes from people that don't participate in the chat room but do listen live, and I try when I know ahead of time to give you all shout-outs, and hope some of you are listening out there tonight, wherever you are, and definitely look forward to much more to come. And, yeah, we're very, very happy with the show, and with, of course, we're doing it for you all. You're the reason we do this show, and we hope that it gives you a nice look into the creative world and a lot of various independent creatives that deserve to have the spotlight shined on them, definitely, for sure. So we will keep up our part, and you keep up your part by spreading the word and connecting with us and all that kind of good stuff, and even being guests with us, as I know, I usually rope Tommy B in at least 10 shows a year, whether as a guest co-host or a guest, and we'll have to get Carol on one of these sometime. That would be fun. And of course, Sandy Lender is always a blast and always up to stuff, definitely. And winning awards, and yeah, just has had more good news with one of her poetry projects, making an anthology, and all kinds of stuff. And yeah, Sandy Lander is just kicking some butt, just to put it in a common vernacular there. So we will go ahead and acknowledge our sponsors while I'm at it, since it is episode 275, and we only had three episodes this month because we had to definitely take a week off with the week of Imaginarium. As you know, that is an absolute insanity on our end, so would not have been able to do justice on the show that time. So we had one episode less this month than normal. So tonight we have three sponsors, because we don't want any of our regular sponsor family not to be featured in a month. And so tonight you have Mary Ann Pohl, you have Sandy Lender, and then Per Bostet, you know, of course, representing the great triumvirate of Sarah Marion Allen and T. Lee Harris. So I will give you a little bit about Mary Ann Pohl, then we'll go to Sandy Lender, and then we'll finish it out with Per Bostet. So as far as Mary Ann Pohl, here you go, a little introduction into what she does. An invisible battle is being fought around us. If we could listen closely, we can hear swords clashing in the war for human souls. The Iconoclast thriller series is not your typical horror. So, if you're looking for blood and guts, just for the sake of blood and guts, you won't enjoy these books. But if you're looking for frightful stories in which ordinary individuals must face extraordinary circumstances and the supernatural, look no farther. And of course, available at Amazon, and you can also visit maryannpohl.com, and I'll spell it out for you, MaryAnnPoll, maryannpohl.com. Check out her site, and also check out her great podcast about the paranormal. Very excellent, excellent podcast. And then we also tonight have the amazing Sandy Lender and her new spot. And then, I'm not gonna give you that treat just yet, Sandy Lender. You're going to love it, though. But here's a little bit about Sandy.
Fantasy author Sandy Lender wants to take you on vacation. All you have to do is grab one of Sandy's many spec fiction titles and let her sweep you away. get ready to cheer for strong heroines, multifaceted zombies, and, of course, all those fabulous dragons. Follow Sandy Lender on the Amazon platform to select your next summer vacation destination.
Thank you, Sandy. Thank you very much. And just hold it there because I got a surprise for you. But then we got Per Bostedt Publications as our other sponsor for tonight's show. And here's a bit about them. Per Bostedt Publications is a small press based in the Louisville metro area, specializing in speculative fiction and other outside-the-box books. With over 30 titles in print and ebook formats and a handful of audiobooks, Per Bostedt offers a little bit of everything. Explore a post-World War II England with 11-year-old Sylvie in Edelweiss for Elizabeth, the sequel to Andrea Gilbey's Bottle Tops for Battleships, or dive into the thrilling world of Karma and Crime, a new supernatural mystery by J. Paul Burroughs. You can find these titles and more at perbostedtpublications.com, at Amazon, or you can find the press in person at events such as Magna Cum Murder in Indianapolis in October. Per Bostedt Publications, where timeless tales unfold. So, yes, love Per Bostedt. Great, great press. Check their titles out. So, see that Clayton made it in tonight, finally. Yeah, Mr. Travel the Country and enjoying the Wild West with all these pictures of grand vistas of natural scenery and the magic of the Western horizon. And he is back among us. And I did see that, yeah, Clayton is bunkered down doing some audiobook work and the writing work, too. Rumor has it he's got a writing project going on lately. So, yeah, it's good to see you again, Clayton, in the chat room. And, yes, Sandy, I did promise you a little treat. I have made more progress on your jingle. I have two more lines to add. So here you go. Sandy Lender, a genre blender. She never fails writing epic tales. So there you go. Four lines now. We've doubled our number of lines for your jingle, and you got to hear me do it, which is terrible, of course. You definitely didn't want to hear me do that. But, yeah, we'll definitely get a professional singer to render that at some point. But yeah, we're Did you fall off your chair, Sandy? Well, it's episode 275, so we can goof off just a little bit tonight, have a little fun, and definitely and have a little fun chatting about stuff. And tonight is open topic. Yeah, we can talk about anything you would like about the craft, about the industry, about, you know, anything creatively themed. And it looks like, okay, good. So it's, I think Sandy is improving there. And, yeah, Clayton was very impressed, I can tell, also with my singing. Thank you, Clayton. Yeah, I'll definitely make sure I'll give you get a recording for you on that and take care of you. But, Sandy, I'm glad you enjoyed that. But, yeah, we'll get somebody that actually can sing. I don't know. Maybe Tommy could sing. I know he's a musically inclined. Maybe he'll jump on and sing that. But yeah, your jingle is developing. But any topic works tonight, folks. So I'm watching a chat room. Yeah, we can chat. I can kind of respond to you in there. Or alternatively, call in. The phone lines are open. Again, the number is 619-639-4616 tonight. 619-639-4616. And we'll get that going. And looks like we do have our first phone call of the evening. So let me bring in the first caller. And I'm just going to have to bring in hot because I don't have another co-host, so I can't do screening. So here we go. Area code 239. This is Steven. You are on the air.
So you're just taking a chance that it's not some crazy person, right?
it's almost that risky. I can't screen while I'm hosting. It's tough. The cats could be trained, maybe, but they're not ready just yet. So, but congratulations on the good news on your anthology acceptance with the poetry, and I understand that you've got some more good news. And I'm glad you called. It's good to actually get to speak with you on the air. So. Let me shut up and you tell us what's going on.
Well, thank you. The poetry thing was exciting and cool, and I was all pleased that one of my poems was selected for the It's the 2021 Poetry Marathon Anthology. So that's, they sent out an announcement over the weekend and said, don't say anything until after the 25th. I'm like, okay, I'll wait till after the 25th. So now I can like shout it from the rooftop. So it makes me, that makes me happy.
Awesome.
But then I found out yesterday, I've lost track of the days, you know. I think it was yesterday I found out that the novella that I wrote over the three-day novella contest over Memorial Day weekend is in the top five of that contest.
Nice.
Like they've,
wow.
I know. They've read through the ones that were submitted, and they've narrowed down the top five, and they listed us in alphabetical order by our last names to send out the announcement. So, you know, we don't know we don't know what they think of those top five yet, but they've got those top five. But they did say that the novellas that were submitted this year from the Memorial Day contest had a lot of mental health themes in them. So the mental health topics that were discussed back at Imaginarium are kind of resonating throughout the writing community right now, I believe. I think that was a really good topic that Imaginarium incorporated into the sessions this year. And it's prevalent in the writing industry right now. People are paying attention to the mental health theme and working it in for the heroes and the heroines to take up that challenge and come through it. I'm really pleased with that thought.
See, our programming is timely, right? That proves it.
Yeah. There you go.
That's
yes,
good news.
Programming.
But I'm glad to hear that things are going well. Of course, I'm not surprised because I know your work very well, and there's a reason you win awards. You're pretty darn good.
Well, thank
but
you.
definitely good to see that. Yeah, you're getting recognition in new quarters and new circles. That's awesome. And glad my little attempt at building your jingle hasn't flopped entirely. So that's good.
I was laughing. Yeah. Well, you know, I was sitting in the living room with the birds around me.
Yeah.
And I just start busting up laughing. They give me that look like, what's happening with you?
Well, what happens is we got to find which bird of yours can learn like words, and then we have to teach them this jingle so that when so they could sing it to you every day. That would be awesome.
Oh, there you go.
But now I just have to get someone that actually can sing to do it for you properly, so it makes sense. But yeah, well, at least we have the text coming along. But it is fun. It is fun.
Nice.
So what else is going on with you, Sandy? Are you doing any kind of traveling or any kind of live events coming up in August? Since we have you on, I might as well ask.
You know, I was going to be traveling for work, but we've canceled that. You know, rental car expenses right now are through the roof. The company I work for my day job, we're a pretty small mom and pop kind of publishing company, and we don't have oodles of cash to spend on airfare plus rental car plus hotel rooms, all that stuff. And wow, prices are just skyrocketing. I mean, my publisher figured out that it was going to cost about $1,000 for the rental car for a couple days.
Wow. That is crazy.
I know. That's on top of airfare, flying, you know, each of us in the company to our destination. It was just going to be crazy. And we just had to cancel the trip. We just came to the conclusion that it was not worth it. So we can do the visits that we needed to do, and put visits in air quotes, pretend you can see me. You know, we had to put our visits, we're going to do them by Zoom and by, you know, GoToMeeting, that kind of thing, which,
right.
You know, we've all learned how to do over the past, you know, 18
mm-hmm.
months or so. So no big
deal. That's true.
We will Zoomify instead of meeting in person.
Yeah, it's a good fill-in and something that definitely is a good backup, of course, but you know, nothing beats the in-person experience, and that's obviously a lot of us felt, you know, just this past month. But it's I'm not surprised, because definitely it's making the indie creatives world a mess, because I mean everything's going up. I mean, I've been watching a lot of industry price metrics, and they've just been going crazy in lots of areas. I mean, from food to raw materials to used cars have actually shot up quite a bit on the average. And yeah, it's definitely, yeah, it's not surprised me if that's filtered over into the rental car market. But we got our airlines tickets ordered for our guest of honor and one of our Imaginators a little earlier in the summer, because I know, you know, even those have climbed up too. So yeah, it's getting pretty expensive out there to do anything.
It is. Well, and the cost of paper is going through the roof right now. The paper mills are having a little struggle, so they're passing that on to the printing houses. My day job, I'm a magazine editor. I don't know how many people in the audience even know who I am, but you know, my day job, I'm a magazine editor. And the cost of paper, it had gone up 10% since, I want to say since last quarter. Don't quote me on that, but I think it was since last quarter. And then we just got a notice within the last month that it's going up another 7%. So 17%, the paper costs have gone up for this magazine that we do. It's like, wow, this is a little bit tough to swallow right now. But, you know, you just got to keep doing business and do what you can.
Are you allowed to give a shout out for them? I know the magazine that you work with, but are you allowed to give a shout out on your magazine?
Oh,
because it's awesome.
Yeah, they won't mind. Yeah, the magazine I do is called Asphalt Pro, because I'm in the business.
Asphalt Pro. Yeah. I must say I've not subscribed yet, but I do find find it interesting.
I know. So, it's bizarre, isn't it? But man, that's what I do in my day job.
Yeah, I know Tommy B right now is probably rushing to subscribe right now. I think he is. Yeah, Asphalt Pro, Tommy. That's
there you go.
It rocks hard. Asphalt Pro. There you go. That's my first bad pun for the evening. But and we got RG with us, I do believe, calling in now.
Yay.
Fantastic.
Very good.
Yay.
All right. Well, since you've got your co-host now, does that mean I can go back to the chat room and let someone else call in and share their good news?
Oh, you can if you want, but
that's what I'm saying.
But RG might not be. RG has probably 38 questions that she wants to ask you right now.
Well, I was listening. I do want to say real quick what you said about the there's like an upsurge of discussion around mental health, and I think that is absolutely wonderful and absolutely needed, and I'm super excited that someone besides me is noticing that. I think, I mean, because the discussion we had at the panel at Imaginarium was phenomenal. Like, it was just, I mean, it was, like, emotional and, you know, it was very, very much needed. And I'm hoping that discussion continues amongst all the creative circles that exist out there.
Good, good. The email that came from Faybreak Books, the people who host that three-day novella contest, the novella short form contest, they talked about the fact that the mental health item was, I wish I could pull it up on the computer and read it to you, because the way they phrased it was just so positive, very uplifting. Uh-huh. It's kind of inspirational, the way they spoke about the way the mental health issues were portrayed and handled in the novellas that were submitted. It made me feel really good that the writers were handling it in a good fashion. That's awesome.
Yeah,
it made me feel good that that's what was submitted this year.
That's awesome. Yeah. And congratulations to you as well.
Oh, well, thank you. Yay.
I was listening. I was at work, like, with the podcast playing on my phone, and I was like, we're clocking out in 5 minutes. Don't give me any grief.
That's funny.
So, yeah, it was cool. But anyway.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to go so that someone else can call in and share good things going on in their writing times, and I'll pay attention, and I'll play in the chat room, and I wish everyone a great evening, okay?
So thank you for calling in, Sandy. Great
okay.
call.
All right. Good night, guys.
Bye. Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, not night exactly, because I know she'll be in the chat room, but good to hear you, RG, because we're it's just you and me here co-hosting tonight. I know we're we'll get another call. I'm sure we'll get another call or two. Don't worry, but it's been a fun kickoff. But now you can join us in progress and start getting ready for being put on the hot seat next week when we make you a guest because of your new releases and upcoming activity, which we can't talk a lot about tonight because next week you are in the crosshairs.
We're gonna save it. Yeah. Well, I do have a new thing to share with everyone, and this is, like, a thing that I found myself, and you're going to hear car noises, so bear with me. I'm driving home now. I discovered on Wattpad, y'all remember Wattpad, the website where you go and, like, write stuff? I found an old story of mine in which I began to rewrite The Phantom of the Opera with the genders flipped. So that is available on Wattpad. It's still out there because the internet is forever. So it exists. I have the first few chapters. I didn't finish it. I just did like the first three chapters. But it is a thing that exists. So anybody that wants to see it, it's out there. Good luck.
Excellent.
I found it today. It's called The Masked Soprano. And it's a gender flip version of The Phantom of the Opera.
That's awesome. That is fantastic. Yes, that is you heard her correct, Sandy. Yes, you said a gender flip story. Yes, a Phantom of the Opera. Yeah, Sandy was trying to confirm that.
Yeah.
And should also mention Sandy's folks. We did mention that her parents had to stay back from Imaginarium because they contracted the virus right beforehand. But they are home and doing much better and almost completely well. So we do want to pass that along to everybody. And I just saw somebody new come in the chat room, and it was you, RG. You are very multitasking right now.
I'm driving and chat rooming. I'm driving the car.
yeah. Better stick to like one thing, mainly driving as you're going. Yeah, if you're hands free, then yeah, you can talk, I guess.
No, I'm hands free. Yes, I am.
Oh, good. Yeah, because I don't want to. No, because you have too bright of a future in the writing world. We can't have bad things happen with you.
Yeah, we'll do the George R. Martin. I can't die
because
I haven't finished my series yet.
Right.
We'll be like,
which
George
I might
R.
add,
R.
I'm finally, after 8 million years, I'm finally going back to watch those gradually. I can't obviously spend all day watching those, because they're full-size episodes. But
no,
Holly and I finally are going back and exploring those. And so far, enjoying it. I do know I'm going to get mad by the end, but...
And it's funny because, like, knowing all the spoilers just from, like, social media and just existing on planet Earth, like, it almost, like, takes off the tension a little bit. Like, because I'm going back, I'm actually binge-watching Grey's Anatomy right now, and I have never watched it in my life. And, like, all I know is, like, memes and stuff. So, like, I kind of know what happens, but I don't know the context of it or anything, so... and I was there for, like, the weird medical stuff, and I was like, I could care less about the interpersonal drama. And everybody's like, oh, just wait. And now I'm like, darn it all, if I'm not, like, into the interpersonal drama. So I get that. Like, going back and watching a popular show that is already past its prime or whatever.
Yeah, weirdly enough, I went back for fun last weekend when I was still, you know, half vegetating mentally as I'm coming out of that whole convention stuff. And I watched some episodes of the 70s TV series Fantasy Island. Ricardo Montalban as Mr. Rourke.
Yes.
And I didn't realize how much depth there were in some of the stories that are in it. I mean, as a kid, you look at it one way, but then here now, after, you know, having, you know, a career going in the book world and writing and for so many years and all that, looking back at it, it's like, oh, wow. I mean, there was some really good stories back on that show, and good storytelling, good characters, and the Ricardo Montalban character is just, I came to appreciate that just 10 times more.
Yeah.
I mean, the subtleties and dialogue with him and the very, very poignant lines that he has, and I was like, that's pretty awesome, and it made me feel nostalgic, of course, but it was a lot of fun.
Right.
But yeah, going back and revisiting shows later can be a fun experience, just because you're gonna look at it with a different set of eyes and hear it with a different perspective.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because that's what I'm watching for Game of Thrones, because that's a clinic. And
single second of Game of Thrones as of yet. So we have it. We have, someone gave us we very legally purchased it, of course. but yeah, no, we have it. We just haven't watched it yet. So, but yeah,
very
seen
cool.
All the YouTube clips and top 10 moments of Game of Thrones ever. Or
oh,
whatever.
Yes.
I don't know. But so yeah, I know everything about it. I just haven't seen it yet.
Well, I've read the books. Of course, the books are now behind the TV show. TV show went a lot farther than the books. And hopefully George finishes the next one at some point. But it's, I'll believe it when I see it in the store. That's how I'm just not getting too worried.
Right.
But I do find that show to be an absolute clinic on character development. And the ensemble cast, which I thought was going to be hard to pull off in a visual medium like television. I thought it's going to be really tough to do this and have the story really make sense. There's so many threads, and it's so plot thick. But I mean, it really has, it really does a great job, and it really does bring through, a good character arc clinic. And, with a lot of them, like Daenerys Targaryen and where she starts and where she finishes. And Jaime Lannister is another good example of a really good character arc. And just go down the line. I mean, there's just so many characters that, just change and grow and, for better or for worse. And it's just amazing. I mean, the character developments that take place. But it's a really good writing clinic, actually.
The character played by Peter Dinklage, what is the name of that character?
It's one of my favorite three, Lannister. Tyrion Lannister.
Okay, cool. I already know he's my favorite character.
He is one of my three favorites.
Yes.
I will reveal the three I have, and for different reasons, but the Hound, Jon Snow, and Tyrion Lannister. Sandor Clegane, the Hound, real big fighter guy, he has quite an arc. But Tyrion and Jon Snow are perhaps my two favorite, but I never can decide between those two, which I like the more. But it's, so many good characters to pick from, but there's so many I like that I'm not, probably not mentioning, but those are the ones that I just gravitate to. What a clever character too. Tyrion I see as has more of George R.R. Martin in him than other characters, if that makes sense. I know writers sometimes let a little bit more of themselves leak into a character, and I think that is one where George himself kind of brings himself through a little bit more than others is the Tyrion character. When you kind of follow George R. R. Martin, read him, listen to him talk, know about him, and then you immerse into the Tyrion character, you can kind of pick that up, and you can definitely see it. So
that is so
but
cool. Yeah, and I don't care somebody, what anyone says. Every author does self-insertion. Like, I don't care what anybody says. Like, we all write ourselves into the story, whether we mean to or not.
Sure.
Like, I mean,
I think
every
so.
Character
I would agree.
In the book is some aspect of ourselves. So some are going to be a little bit more obvious, some are not. But yeah, And I don't think that's a bad thing. I'm one of those that, you know, every piece of advice that you get as a writer, like, take that piece of advice and learn it and know it and then turn it on its head. So, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The whole,
I agree.
Write what you know thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just a
lot of it's coming from the right place.
But anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have a lot more genuine feel to your characters if you're coming from that center like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And it looks like you're in for a treat, RG, because it looks like, I think this may actually be Clayton, who's, you know, since you're here and it's open mic night, it's like almost like a given that he was going to call in. But I think this is him, 740 area code. Is this Clayton?
I'm afraid that it is.
Hello.
Yes, I told you, RG, your treat. Here it is.
I commented on
the chat room that I didn't think you needed any additional distractions, so I held off until you just announced you had parked. So if you're walking across whatever passes for a parking lot or your driveway and you trip over a squirrel and fall down, that's on you. That's not going to be on me.
No, I'm actually in my car is like my sound booth, so whenever I call in for the podcast, I'm in my car because it's like the quietest and most unbothered place that I can exist. So, yeah, so I'm just sitting in my car right now.
Oh, that's incredibly 1979 Gary Newman of you right there.
It's so true.
Great reference.
I'm fully embraced that aesthetic.
Yeah, you get bonus points for that one.
It's not a station wagon with wood paneling, though.
That's one of the things about being so old is you can make references that most of these kids have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm right here with you.
My dad and mother actually had a Dodge Aspen station wagon with wood paneling when we grew up, so I know all about that, Rebecca.
Yep.
It was a gem. It was a gem.
Yep.
But anyway, the reason it finally provoked me to call in was I've moved into the second part of my second audiobook, Recording the Raws, down in my basement. Speaking of quiet places, I guess I could record in the car, but that would make an interesting dynamic of background noise.
Yeah.
And since it is called Foes and Rivals, of the three sections, each one is sort of an increasing boss monster, so to speak, for my main character, Android Nicole 5. And the second one his surname is Bake, but he's Central American but raised in Portland, Oregon. And I couldn't figure out how to do a voice like that. And once again, being older, 6 months, she doesn't like my reminder of that, but older and wiser, my wife suggested, why don't you go find a slightly Hispanic male voice, an actor, and try to incorporate that. And after doing some research, I thought about what you were just talking about, Ricardo Montalban, and not the slightly thicker accent he uses when he was older, even in Fantasy Island. I went all the way back and listened to Star Trek original series, The Space Seed, about four times in a row. And because back then, you know, American culture being what it was, I mean, people could barely stand Ricky Ricardo at that time. So only occasionally would you have a slight Latin Mexican element creep into what he was saying. And so I borrowed that, and that's what I've been trying to voice Armando Bakke's voice as for this part two. And
that's
every
cool.
now and then I'll just say,
awesome.
You know, instead of saying a letter I in English, I'll turn it into a E, as in you would say in Italian or Spanish or Mexican. And I know hypothetically Mexican is Spanish, but we all know better. But it was very much, and of course no such thing as coincidences, you know that, Stephen, it was very much listening to Ricardo Montalban's voice, because the man is an astonishing, flexible actor.
Oh, phenomenal.
when I've seen the interviews with him, it's much more, his voice, his natural voice seems to be much more like the Mr. Rourke voice, but in the Space Seed, most of those elements were out, because after all, with a name like Khan Noonan Singh, you're supposed to be playing somebody from South Asia. And when he played the reboot of that in the movie Star Trek II, he was much more back into his own voice, but in a much more grating way. And I didn't want to go that far, because this is still a relatively young and experienced character. He's an asshole in my book, but I didn't want to give him more authority than he should. So I thought that Montalban voice was where I could land this antagonist for part two of my audiobook.
That's awesome.
That's brilliant. Yeah. And you're right about, because if you watch the original episode, you know, the comparison of his performance in The Space Seed versus The Wrath of Khan, he's a lot more subdued. But he has this, like, simmering energy that, like, even in the original episode, he's this formidable foe. And, like, I don't know, I forget, like, what the decision was to bring him back as a major villain in the sequel. But, yeah, if you guys haven't seen it, seriously, go find this episode, because it's phenomenal. And Ricardo Montalban is the deal.
Yeah,
How
in the in that original, in the Space Seed, that he, as you said, RG, the man manifested power.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I don't know the story of what, did they look around and say, oh, well, the first movie really sucked ass. We need to have an actual antagonist for the second movie. And maybe somebody went back to the original series and said, the man was a badass, and look at what he's done since then. And his acting is so flexible. You know, why don't we try that? Perhaps that's what they did. I don't know. But since I did have to go back and watch it over and over again, there are a few scenes that I would just pause and go, damn, I wish I could talk like that. And not just because of the voice, just to be able to pause and look at someone and just, he just shut Shatner down. The man owned every scene he was in, which is probably why Shatner never let him back, because the man's an egotist. But every scene that Montalban was in, it's like he didn't have to chew the carpet. He didn't have to yell. He didn't have to throw a punch. He just owned the scene. And I'm trying to borrow a tiny bit of that for what I'm doing in this audiobook.
Well, even in Fantasy Island, he exudes that kind of subtle, powerful presence constantly. I mean, in the scenes where he's in, where he just gives a look, he just says like a couple words. I mean, it's nothing, and he just takes over, and he is definitely asserts authority easily. So, yeah, he's got that kind of presence. Great.
Yeah, I don't recall
great actor
from Fantasy Island, because it was originally just a TV movie. I don't know if you've seen that one, Stephen or RG. And he did almost all of his own stunts. And at one point, he was in a fist fight with one of the guests on the island. Now, when it came to the series, he's this austere, standoffish gentleman. But in that made-for-TV movie, I mean, he was down in the dirt.
Yeah. No, I do recall that movie. I just can't remember everything about it, but I had watched that, from when I was a kid all the way up for the early 80s. I think the series ended about 84. I think it ran about 7 seasons, but yeah, definitely a winner. Totally. A lot of fun to revisit too, if you get a chance. It's on Tubi. So Tubi is free. I know you have to put up with some commercials, but it is a free channel if you got a streaming service of some kind of Roku, Amazon Fire Stick or whatever. But yeah, you can find Tubi, T-U-B-I, great channel. And that's what it's on. So yeah, but anything Ricardo Montalban.
I've had more things recommended to me on Tubi.
Yep, there's a good channel. but on the accents and doing something where you kind of pull an accent back, I just listen to Sam Neill comment on that. They have a pretty cool new series on Netflix that's kind of like a look back at major franchise movies of the past, and they had an episode about Jurassic Park. And, of course, Sam Neill is from New Zealand, and then at first they wanted him to try to do an American accent, and he really doesn't like doing American accents, so he started to, you know, they were letting him start to do a New Zealand accent. Then they asked him to do like a halfway, like, you know, they wanted him to kind of go halfway between American accent and the New Zealand accent. And I've always thought that for an actor, you know, to actually pull into a halfway mode kind of accent would be really tricky, you know, because you're going to be tempted to kind of tilt one way or the other. I think it's actually probably even harder than just doing one full accent in one mode or another. So
well,
I don't know how you feel about
halfway?
That.
Halfway between New Zealand and an American accent, I guess that'd be a Hawaiian accent.
Almost, yeah, yeah. But yeah, he said it was a challenge, a bit of a challenge to get that midway point. But I just thought of that when you're talking about having to really look at the nuance of your character as well and how that might have been for you as a narrator to kind of find that fine line where it's not too thick, but it's not too thin either.
Yeah,
that's got
to
be.
I did not want to have my character sound like, you know, Frito Bandito, but I did want everybody to know that yes, this character is ethnically Central American without going over the top and sounding like an idiot.
Yeah.
Right. And you're back, RG, by the way. I saw your call drop for a second,
thank you.
You're on.
Sorry. No, my husband texted me, and my little phone was like, "Oh, not compute, must drop call." So. But now I just have to comment, you, Clayton, you doing that and taking, like, basing your performance on an authentic accent, that's very socially conscious of you. You know that, right?
Saying socially conscious to me is almost enough for me to either hang up or start shouting swear words at you, one of the two.
No, let's not do
I mean,
if it's supposed to be
a compliment, perhaps I simply am too dumb to understand it.
Well, let's keep the RG Clayton reunion going in a positive manner tonight.
I'm positive
if I was over at her house, she would be serving me some lightly baked river otter right now because I know it's one of her favorite dishes.
And it would be delicious.
Probably with a gar.
No, I've never actually eaten river otter. I have eaten alligator.
I've done that too.
Yeah, and it's good. Like, I like it. I will eat it. And the only thing I can't bring myself to eat, and y'all are going to crack up, is frog's legs. And it's nothing to – I've actually eaten frog's legs, and they taste fine. But they look like marathon runners. So that disturbs me, and I can't bring myself to eat them anymore.
So you're saying that you were chased by a marathon runner as a child and traumatized by that, so you can't eat the frog's legs?
Maybe, yeah. No, yeah, something like that. No, they just look like these little weird, skinny, little muscular legs, and they look like people, and it's horrifying, and I can't do it.
I've never thought about it that way, but
yeah,
it's almost, I might be able to see that. Yeah, yeah. Marathon runners. I'm going to pay attention next time I see a picture of marathon runners. I'm going to think of RG and frog legs now and
like
try to see if I can picture it.
Yeah. I mean, every time we go to the Chinese buffet, I'm like, ugh, frog's legs. I mean, there's like fish heads and like the sushi bar, and I mean, I am there for all of it, but I cannot do the frog legs. Yeah,
so when
they
show any
like
footage
people.
From the Tokyo Olympics about the races and marathons, we're all going to be envisioning a whole bunch of frogs running down the lanes.
Yeah.
I think
exactly.
So.
Yep. They have those big, long, like lanky back legs. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
I was going to say, frog legs themselves are not too terribly exotic. I mean, yeah, those are found
really
fairly easily. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of folks are very fond of them.
Now, Sandy Lynn is talking about squirrel in the chat room. I've never had squirrel, but my dad did go squirrel hunting once. And so, like, Okay, this gives you an insight into my childhood. So he brought back all the squirrels, put them in the refrigerator, and they were skinned at that point. Like, they were, like, ready to prepare and eat or whatever. And so my mom thought it would be hilarious to, like, get into my Barbie clothes. So she went in and got them out of the refrigerator and put Barbie clothes on the squirrels and then put them back in the refrigerator.
This goes a long way of explaining what many things are wrong with RG.
Oh, jeez. I've got more insight now, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, Holly grew
there
up.
Were, like, little,
when
the little shoes on the end of their legs.
Kentucky, when I lived in Frankfort and worked in Georgetown, some people I work with who routinely squirrel hunted would get me squirrel meat, and they said that the best way is just lightly fry it in oil and then mix it up with cornbread and some onions. And I tried that a couple of times, and a little chewy, but I thought that was pretty good.
That sounds amazing. Yeah. No, I would totally eat it.
Without the barbecue.
Yeah, Holly had it growing up with her folks up in Indiana, but now she's gravitated to where, you know, she takes care of squirrels. You know, we've got a flock of them that she feeds in our backyard now. So she's, you know, now it's not quite as appetizing now that she's befriended and adopted a bunch. So it's, so we don't do that anymore. But she said it wasn't bad, though, if I remember her talking about it. She said the meat itself was not that bad. Yeah. Well, I don't know if it was like chip, but she said it wasn't too bad, growing up. And but she doesn't do that. Our squirrels would make for a lot of meat, though, because she's fattened them up incredibly. So, they are very, very plump squirrels. But the cats sure look at them very hungrily through the back window, but that's about it.
Well, before this
we take care of
the cooking channel.
Squirrel hour. Squirrels.
Yeah, squirrel hour. Thank you. Since I was able to cover just a tiny bit of the audiobook I'm trying to finish up, which, since my family's going on vacation for a week next week, that should give me plenty of time and a nice quiet house to do it.
You just went on vacation.
They always go on vacation, and I always stay here. It's funny how that works out. But, as long as there's a liquor store, it's a vacation for me. Logged into the chat room is that when you actually had me on officially way back when, first week of February, and I said that I accidentally saw something when looking at Daniel Bark's Gentleman's Cigar Trolley, as y'all recall. And that, that lighting exercise became a prologue, and that prologue became the opening of a three-part book. And so my writing exercise as of right now is 55,110 words. And I've finished part one. I've finished part two. I'm currently writing part three. And as I've said, trying to do something different every time, I actually am taking this off-world, and I'm borrowing from Michael Crichton, who is famous for, let's take a bunch of different individuals who may or may not like each other, but preferably they don't, because that makes it more interesting, and then put them in an enclosed environment from which they cannot escape, whether it's Sphere, whether it's Andromeda Strain, or almost any single one of his novels. Just pack these people into a sardine tin and send them off someplace. Well, as it is, I've got 3 + 1 + 1, that's the way I think, So I've got these five people on a very small reactionless motored spaceship on a three-day trip to Mars, because with the reactionless motor, upper limit to your acceleration. And it's turning out to be very interesting. I'm learning a lot about these characters. And one of the things that caught me absolutely flat-footed when I had my first official invite onto the show is, why are so many of my characters female leads? And in this case, all three parts are driven by the three eldest adult male children of Empress Faustina. So I thought, haha, I'll show those two people on Star Chamber that, yes, I can actually do this.
Yeah.
Nice. But it coming along nicely. No particular end in sight. I think there'll be a final part four where everything may or may not get wrapped up. Nothing ever really gets wrapped up in my future history. And then the only other creative related thing that I've done recently, I think you may have seen this, Stephen, because I cross-posted to Gab every now and then, is every Friday, tomorrow will be, or day after tomorrow, will be number 8. So 2 months ago, I started a short podcast.
Yep.
Comes out
saw
every
that.
Friday. And it's generally related to my future history one way or the other. Sometimes it's just talking about what I've written. The last one, for example, was talking about the politics of the surviving humans left on Earth. The one before that, I'd somebody write in and ask a question is, well, you've got machines coded in, especially the AIs, not so much the androids, but the AIs coded in Japan, another set coded in Milan, and another set coded in St. Petersburg. And he said, well, what if a bunch had been coded in communist China? And that turned into about these aren't very long. It's like, they're only about 15 to 20 minutes long. And this was about 18 minutes because I realized that glibly it wouldn't end well, because if any medium-sized company and up, you're going to have the party watching what you do. And so if not nationalism in China, at least party loyalty would be coded into a machine. And considering that any communist party is built on lies and sustained by lies, I think we're all old enough to remember 2001 and 2010 and how exactly that worked out. Or maybe not.
So you discuss all of that, all the origin areas of your AI development, as far as, like you said, St. Petersburg, Milan, Japan, uh-huh. and then the speculation about, you know, what would happen if you had some developed through China, for instance.
Right.
That would be a pretty interesting episode, especially with you,
yeah.
to see how you mm-hmm. tackle
Wait,
that.
So is it a podcast, you said?
Yes, you can go to my blog, moxiv.com, and the ones about China is podcast number 6. Podcast number 7 is about politics, and actually what I'm thinking about doing, recording tomorrow and releasing the day after tomorrow, will be a shorter but more technical version. I was going to talk about and this will stroke Stephen's ego to no end, because I was going to talk about how copy editors are worth every damn penny you pay.
I was trying this out,
not just you. I've had some, you're one of what, four of my
no,
copy
I know,
editors.
I know.
So, I mean,
they're making me feel warm and fuzzy now.
But
hey,
I was testing
this
out
something
on somebody
Clayton and I agree
job.
On.
Mm. Well, we agree on quite a bit, but that's why we don't
agree. Actually, all of us agree on this. I would always have an editor myself.
So I tried this out a little bit on somebody at work, and I said, you can read your own material, and what you miss would astonish you. You can now, of course, go to Grammarly, and what Grammarly misses will astonish you. And you have to get it under a completely independent pair of human eyes who, as not an editor, but as a copy editor, are line by line, almost word by word, and you get back what I call this blood-soaked manuscript, because all the red on it is like, oh, my God, I can't believe how stupid I am. And so they are worth every penny.
Actually, you both, I can say both of you turn in what editors anywhere would call clean copy. You guys do turn in really clean copy. Yes, there are marks, but it's often just, you know, stuff that we think will improve things even more, not necessarily that it was terrible gaffes in every page. But yes, you are correct. I mean, it's you do need a person at the end of the chain checking everything out, and that's something I live by and have lived by since my first book as an author. So I'm on the same page. Yeah, and I'm enjoy that episode, and I'll have to share that one around for sure.
And the extension to that is I'm going to discuss the importance of finding and securing a relationship with somebody who can do your cover art. because I don't know who introduced the absolutely poisonous idea that you shouldn't judge a book by its cover, because everyone does. And that's the way the world works.
Visual age.
Back before the interwebs, at least as somebody's walking through the bookshelves at Barnes & Noble or, God, some other brick-and-mortar store, I can't even remember anymore.
Books A Million Borders. Daltons.
Or
B. Daltons.
The books parts that used to be in shopping centers that don't exist anymore. And you might get somebody's eyes to linger on your book for maybe 2 to 3 seconds. In this day and age, when people are either clicking or scrolling with their finger down their phone, you've got something maybe the size of a postage stamp going by at 0.25 seconds.
Today's covers have to work as thumbnails.
Engage not even the ape brain. If you cannot engage the reptile brain 2 to 5 seconds to make somebody go, well, what's that? Then, no, you've potentially lost hundreds, if not thousands, of readers. You've got to do something to make them stop, and that takes good art, and that takes money. And I know a lot of writers don't have it. I mean, like me, the magic money tree in the backyard. My daughter's going to Findlay University, so that's where that all goes. But you've got to scrape together what you can. In my case, okay, I'm back to box wine again. But, you know, at least it gets me drunk so I can write. But it also frees up enough money that I can still pay Claudia Sperl in Hesse, Germany, to do these covers for me and try to arrest people in that 0.25-second window that I've got. The copy editor gets the guts together, and a good cover artist will get eyeballs onto the book so that they can get to the guts. And that's what my next podcast is going to be. It's a little bit more technical. I'm not going to be talking about my stories or anything like that. And it'll be shorter because it's really just going to be slightly more into detail of what I was just saying now. Writer who is aspiring to be a writer, or they've got a manuscript, or they've got one or two books out there, but they thought Grammarly was okay. And they thought having their nephew make stick figures on the cover is good enough. Well, it's not. And if you sell one copy over the next 10 years, you're going to be lucky. And you're probably going to get a 2-star review because they're going to say that the interior of the book was all crap. So you've got to, I mean, writing, you've not only got to invest your time, you absolutely have to find the money. You have to make the time to write, and you have to find the money to make it commercially not available. My mind just suddenly went blank. Must be all that cheap box
wine. Viable.
Viable. Thank you.
Viable,
See? That's why I pay you, Stephen.
There you go. But you hit on a good thing, though, because today's cover designer has to design for a small image. Today's cover designer has to design with a thumbnail in mind on Goodreads, on Amazon, et cetera. Not necessarily even like the image that you see on a physical bookshelf, but actually something that's tiny has to catch your eye. So I think it's a little rougher, to do that today. Be honest.
I mean, look back to the quote-unquote, golden age of science fiction from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and you would have covers where there's so much going on. And if I'm standing there for an hour in front of the science fiction department at Borders, that's one thing. Because, my mom dropped me off so she could go into the rest of the mall, and I'm just hanging out there, and they're hoping I'm not shoplifting, which I didn't. But you can spend the time and look at the cover and flip it over and read the back. But no, when you're exactly right. It's thumbnails. And one of the approaches, and I could be wrong, but this is the approach that I've taken, and to some degree it seems to work. I'm not saying it's perfect, but it seems to work. That's one of the reasons, if you look at especially the covers, not so much my first two or three books, is that they've got human faces, usually with the main character, predominantly front and center, because not so much your reptile brain, but your ape brain is going to see a human face, and they're immediately attached to that. Who is this, friend or foe? Your ape brain is going to want to know in a split second, friend or foe. And that may make them pause. So as opposed to some abstract art or, you know, a spaceship set against the starry sky. I mean, Christ, who doesn't see that? There's thousands of those out there. But who is this person, friend or foe? So that's the approach that I've been working with my current cover designer about, to try to make people stop on that thumbnail.
Yeah. That's a brilliant
idea.
Nice.
No, it's not brilliant. It's good enough. Don't flatter me.
Well, that's really interesting. And I don't know, I'm curious to hear your feedback on this, Clayton, because what I do when I'm looking at, like, what kind of cover, what kind of theme, you know, what do I want it to look like, is I'll go to my genre, and I'll go into Amazon, look at, like, the top 10 or the top 20 of my genre, and I'll just kind of scroll through and look at what the best sellers in my genre, what do their covers look like? And of course, I'm not going to copy them, but I'll get an idea, because you will see themes. You will see common colors. You'll see, like, trending colors. You'll see, you know, are there a lot of circles on the cover? You know, for a while, and it was like right after The Hunger Games came out, and, you know, she had that, like, circular emblem on the cover of all the books. Every single dystopian YA book, like, for the next 3 years had some kind of circular shape on the cover of their book. You know, so I mean, you'll see trends in book covers, and I don't know, that's something I like to look at. Whether or not I go with that trend is usually, you know, that part's up for debate, but I like to at least be aware of what the trends are.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I'm not remotely an original person doing just that at an old brick and mortar store in Columbus, 45 minutes away from here. And when I went in there 4 years ago and just walked around of different fiction sections, not just science fiction, fantasy, but just different fiction sections. And I just thought, there's a lot of people looking back at me. And that's where I first developed this idea. And the idea of emblems, I haven't gone into it that closely, probably because You're going to be shocked to hear this, but I'm something of a contrarian asshole. And if I started to notice, I know, crazy talk, but if I started to notice that this is what all the cool kids are doing, I would guarantee you that I would dig my hooves in like the meanest mule you've ever seen.
Yep.
Just because I'm that big of a jerk.
Yep.
I might borrow here and there from it, but it's like, oh, well, you know, maybe if I could add this element to it, okay, that's fine. But, oh, everybody has a circular emblem with a fiery bird on it. Well, F you very much. No, thank you. Maybe that cost me 100,000 readers. Okay, and I'm going to die poor, but at least I'll die poor, and I'll die confident that it's my book, my story, and my cover.
Right.
Well, there's a lot to be said for kind of like, I mean, I think you both are hitting on some key elements. So, you know, being aware of a lot of what's out there and what seems to be working in a given type of book is got to be taken into thought. But also what Clayton said, how to stand apart, how to be that thing that, you know, sets it apart from the rest of the pack so that people actually pay attention to it instead of just scrolling through it thinking, oh, it's just another one of those, or it's another clone of a popular book. You don't want to ever be seen as like a derivative kind of thing, a derivative series, derivative, like
true.
Clone of something popular, a trend follower as opposed to a trend establisher. So you have to find that fine line where, you're not totally out of the totally so far out left field that you don't look like you belong, but also that, you know, you've got to stand out and have something that, you know, stands apart. And so, that's not easy. It's easier said than done, but you're both onto some key points here.
And
well, I mean, the thing is
driving from that. Go ahead, RG.
I was just gonna say, it literally, like, seeing another human face, you know, literally, like you said, it triggers parts of the brain. It, like, lights up a deep brain reaction that you don't get when you're just looking at, like, a circle or a fiery bird, or, you know, like, it's that other human face. you know, it literally triggers the brain and catches your attention on a very, like, base animalistic level that people aren't even aware of. But, yeah, I mean, that's a very clever way to draw people in.
And deriving from that, something I've only started doing for the three covers of my recent American Imperium trilogy is I did get a fair amount of positive feedback of people saying, wow, look at her eyes. So the fact that in my future history, this tiny subgroup of humans, which are called demi-humans, partly nervous systems reared by the machines, and the only physical manifestation of the fact that they're different is they all have these almost polychromatic eye colors. And actually, even very tangential to that is one of them gets his eye color. One of the princes of Faustina does something so incredibly stupid, she actually burns his eyes out. He can still see, but he just looks like a normal human. And so I'm looking at my notes over here, and I have this, it's on this page, it's called Demi-Human Eye Colors. And for each of the demi-humans in my future history, they all have a unique color. And anytime one of them shows up as a primary or secondary character, I'm going to over accentuate it on the cover, simply because the feedback I got for the three covers with Faustina on them and her turquoise eyes, and people say, wow, look at that.
So, yeah, again, they look good.
If you've ever seen some of the research done as to how people look at faces, and they'll track the eye movement of people looking at different pictures placed in front of them, is damn near 70% of how people look at faces, they're looking at eyes.
Yeah.
They'll look at eyes primarily, a little bit of nose, back to the mouth, back to the eyes, a quick flick to the forehead, back to the eyes, back to the mouth. And I had forgotten that study because I'd read it, God, I don't know, 20 years ago. And then when people started talking about how my cover artist, Claudia, had done Faustina's eyes, it came back to me, and I went, son of a bitch. So when it comes to any going forward, if there's going to be a main character on the front, and I'm not sure how it's going to be tough, but if I do actually turn this writing exercise into an actual book, how I can get, you know, my three sons, so to speak, Faustina's three sons on the cover, well, one of them is going to have normalized because of his punishment, but another one had, let's see, Gary Faustina, Laszlo's are pale blue, like holes punched in a summer sky, and Roland's are silver. And just like you would, it's hard to see because I was using a different artist at the time, but if you go back even two and a half years to Worlds Without End, is Henge, who is a machine that manifested a mortal form, her eyes are, as I call it, burnished gold, like that of a lion on the veldt.
Nice.
So again, there's a human face, and now I know, even within a human face, put an additional hook there and make them track right to their eyes and go, what the hell is that? Don't make it ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Make it an attractive person, attractive face, and don't make it some god-awful, you know, oh, it looks like pool blood. No, don't be done. But make it something that will make them stop on your thumbnail. I'm going to use that term from now on because I think Stephen nailed that right on the head. Make somebody stop on your thumbnail.
Mm-hmm. No, it's definitely true. And and color schemes too. I mean, that's getting into that too. You know, the color palette that's used on a given color given cover. Yeah, it's definitely got to have a bit of a harmony flow to it. And yeah, you put all those elements together, you got a winner. No question.
Yeah. I'm looking at your Amazon page right now. From my oldest books
to my newest books, you can see, I mean, like that in the fourth law, washed out blue background silhouettes.
Mm-hmm.
I got a bit of a improvement for this, for Echoes, where you've got Faustina's crystalline eyes right up in your damn face.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got the two main characters from Cursed Hearts there, but I hadn't learned this yet. I was still very young, and all their eyes are down. Their eyes are closed.
Mm-hmm.
So all you have is these two faces, which is one more than you should have. And even in the reboot I have of Crosses and Double Crosses, I had learned my lesson about faces, but because that is such an incredibly dark, evil novella, I told Claudia, because the original cover was quite different, but I told Claudia, I said, no, I only want to see the back of the main character. I don't want to see Sylvia's face, because she allows herself to be pulled into something she knew damn well she shouldn't, but she was seduced by power. So I said, no, she's facing the crosses. That's what she's walking into. I don't want to see her face.
Hmm.
And then the cover art for Worlds Without End, a little grainy, but that's the guy that I used at the time. And then once you get to the American Imperium trilogy, that's where I'm going.
Right.
I mean, hell, even look at from Christ,
really
5 years ago now, look at my children's early reader. You've got little Henge's massive head as she's laying down in the grass looking up at heaven.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's incredible.
And my glass is empty. My voice is starting to go. There's about 20 minutes left, so I'm going to get the hell off, and hopefully somebody a hell of a lot more
real
talented
quick,
than
what's
I am
your website,
can call
Clayton?
In.
Website.
What's your website real quick?
Or blog,
www.machciv.com.
Okay.
I'm sure Stephen will be able to post it to the chat room as well.
All right, cool.
And I've got routine updates of the raws from what I'm writing. I've been doing that for as long as I've had the website, and I've got my podcast every Friday. And every now and then, no, I don't even do that, so I won't say it. And then beyond that, the only next thing I'm working on, and this is a fall project, and it was supposed to be a summer project, and guess what? We all get overtaken by events, is... If anyone is listening or you two know, please let me know by sending in the chat room or sending me an email that I am going to write a wiki for all of Machine Civilization, all the characters, all the locations, all the humans, all the machines, absolutely everything. I figure that will take me flat out a month, and I've looked briefly at it. At this, there's this Wikipedia software, there's that, but I need something that's compatible with my WordPress website, and I have not yet made myself older as to what that is. So if anyone is listening and knows that, please ever let Steven know, and he can let me know, or post it to the chat room, and I'll try to pick up on it. But that is something I have committed myself to doing. Because at this point, I'm sitting on published about 1 million words. And not so much a reviewer, but somebody who I chat with a great deal on his blog, Francis Pareto. You may have heard of him, Stephen, on Gab. He's also an author of science fiction.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
And he started reading the first of my American Imperium books. And as he said, there's starting a story in the middle and there's going too far. He thought I went too far. That's the first criticism I've had in that regard. And so I thought, if I've got, doesn't know how to contact me, has access to something, well, I can go to his website and, look, here's a wiki so I can find out, so Faustina's not even human. Oh, shit, now that explains that. And they can go back to the book at that point as opposed to just tossing it out the window and not buying the other two.
Right.
So I need to get that wiki down. But, it's something I don't know how to do. So if anyone does, please let me know. Other than that, once again, I thank both of y'all very much for putting up with me, and let's
do
it again
great.
Sometime soon.
You got it. Take care, awesome. Clayton. Bye-bye. That's awesome. Well, you got your treat, RG. You had a big reunion with Clayton after many, many, many weeks. He's back. He's been busy from what I can tell. And good insights on cover art and audio books and accents and narration. And that was a very awesome call. We covered a lot.
He does have a wealth of knowledge. Legit. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't just sit around and drink bourbon. He actually does stuff. I know y'all don't believe
it.
No, he's a very, very sharp guy, and definitely appreciate the call, Clayton. And, very, very good writer as well. So, looking forward to that. And, the covers he's got, his new cover artist last few is Claudia. She is fantastic. And, he really does have some eye-popping covers. And I'm just waiting for this new project he's on, where rumor has it that he's got characters based on my descendants there in the future. But my descendants evidently pop up in this next tome of his, and I just hope I got fingers crossed that they turn out to be
so
somewhat noble, but
curly redheaded bearded.
that they're actually decent. They're not evil, at least.
I remember when Lord of the Rings came out, you were so excited about the orcs, and and I was excited about the elves, and my brother-in-law was saying that everyone identifies with the characters that they are most like, and I was like, well, if that's the case, then I'm a hobbit. Because I'm most like the hobbit, because I just want to sit in a little, underground apartment and eat all day. That's fine with me.
Yeah. Oh, as I've not gotten old, but older, I find the hobbit world a lot more appealing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at first I was all about Rivendell. I was like, I mean, I don't know. Gollum kind of had, there was nothing wrong with Gollum. He wasn't evil. He just was very obsessed with his hobby, which was taking care of his ring. And, people get into their hobbies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And, the orcs, I love the design of the orcs so well in that, because they really popped from what I had seen in my head when I was a kid growing up.
Yeah.
And,
you
have the epic battles in mind and real gritty orcs and, of course, the elves and everything. And I was just hoping they didn't screw that up when the movies came out. And to my great joy, they came through flying colors. It's awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah, but I have to admit, because I knew Peter Jackson from his early works. And if anyone is not familiar with Peter Jackson's early work, just go do a quick Google search and thank me later. You're welcome. Are you, Stephen, familiar with his earlier works before Lord of the Rings?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So because I will say, one of the movies I saw at the Kentucky Theater, and, I write zombie books, so I have a strong constitution for, horror and, gruesome imagery. The scene from this movie had me sprinting up the aisle into the lobby so I wouldn't, throw up all over the movie theater. The movie was Dead Alive. Also in some... Yeah, some parts of the world
Classic.
Are called, Brain Dead, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's about, this rat monkey that starts the zombie apocalypse. I mean, it is the most bananas movie you will ever see. Ever.
Oh, yes.
And so when it was announced that he was directing the Lord of the Rings movies, I was like, what? The Dead Alive guy? Seriously? And so I was like... I don't know. I was pleasantly surprised with how the movies came out.
Oh, yeah, Dead Alive and, yeah, everything that came mm-hmm. after that, like Bad Taste and Meet the Feebles and The Frighteners, of course, and yeah, a lot of crazy stuff before he hit the big time. Yeah. But Dead Alive was
evolved over time.
But if you want gore, I mean, Dead Alive will deliver everything you want and more. That's a very gory movie. Yeah. And it's funny because you see touches of that later in the big movies. You see little hints of that early Peter Jackson and just some of the edges that he puts on some of the bigger stuff. And so, yeah, he drew from that. There's no question.
Yeah,
heavenly creatures,
it was
a lot of stuff.
It was the scene that got me. Yeah. You know, you have to know what I'm talking about.
But
if you're into like old school horror, definitely this one is a must-see.
Yeah. Yeah. And Bad Taste is just so bad it's fun. I mean, it's one of those kind of movies that's just so off the wall and ridiculous and crazy that it's just simply purely enjoyable. And that was his very first one.
Yeah.
And my favorite scene in that one is where they shoot like a rocket propelled grenade at this house and it goes through the house and it goes straight at a sheep on a hillside and blows up the sheep. I know that sounds awful,
God.
But in the movie, it is funny. It's just bizarre stuff like that.
It's
hilarious.
So and to this day, every single time I hear Peter Jackson, I'm like, he's the Dead Alive guy. He will always be the Dead Alive guy. I don't care how many Hobbit movies he makes, he's the Dead Alive guy.
Yeah. Oh, you can never live it down. I mean, yeah, that's an all-time classic now. But I do hope to see some good stuff from Peter going forward because, boy, he's got a feel for the epic scale kind of movie.
Absolutely.
And did a wonderful job with Lord of the Rings. I did feel, I'll be honest, I thought The Hobbit could have been two movies. Didn't think it needed to be three.
Oh,
I thought it could be condensed to two movies instead of three good movies.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed The Hobbits. I really did.
Mm-hmm.
And I could understand what they were going for. And, I mean, I love Martin, what's his name, as an actor. What's his name? The guy that played Bilbo? Martin Sheen. You know.
No. Now you're tripping me up here. Oh, no.
I know
these things really well.
But, like, the entire second movie, especially. Well, yeah, the second movie. Like, everything that it was, because the kids and I was reading it to the kids, the book, and I was like, this whole movie was like one sentence in the book. Because it was all, like, fresh in our head. And, like, you had extra characters, which is fine. And, I mean, it's fine. I mean, I don't know. I guess it's fine. It's fine. But, you had this extra characters and, just all the stuff that was padded out to make it into a movie. But, yeah, it was literally, like, one sentence in the book. And I was like, nah, okay. But it was entertaining. I did enjoy it. I really did.
Yeah. And you're thinking of, for Bilbo, it was Martin Freeman. So
Freeman,
that was
that's
the,
it.
Yep.
The,
yeah.
Yep.
As far as the Hobbit
He's
trilogy.
Also He plays a very good, like, put upon everyman type character.
Yeah, I do agree with Clayton. I think the decision on The Hobbit to stretch the material into three films is definitely economic in nature. They wanted
definitely.
To have the same trilogy marketing that they had with the first one. And but I do think, yes, Clayton, I think they could have done one giant first film, but they did have enough material and visuals and things like that that I think that two would have been a comfortable compromise. Where they could have had, more than one film, but yet
honest,
still.
I really did like the storyline between the dwarf and the elf woman, played by Evangeline Lilly.
Oh.
Like, I liked that character. And what was his name? I know
Keely.
It's played by Keely. Yeah, Keely. Because, I mean, they had really good chemistry and everything. The only thing that took me out of it was there was a scene towards the end of the second movie, I think, where they're speaking to each other, and they did this forced perspective thing to show just how much taller she is than him, and it mm-hmm. looked absolutely ridiculous. Like, every other scene
yes, it did.
They were in, like they were sitting yeah. down, and she, you know, like, their levels were completely different, but this one scene, they were standing face-to-face, and it was supposed to be, like, this big emotional scene, and I could not take the scene seriously, because it just looked ridiculous. You know, she looked like she was
yep.
10 feet tall, and he looked like he was, like, 4 feet tall. And, I mean,
yes,
you
know,
I'm not shaming anyone, but it looked bizarre.
Yeah, definitely. It was, yeah, visually it looked a little off there, but it is good stuff.
But
hey,
we've
actually
great.
We have completed the 275th episode, at least in 30 seconds here. So wanted to just thank you for joining me, co-hosting this milestone tonight,
oh,
RG.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you again, Clayton, for the call. Thank you very much for the call, Clayton. That was a very awesome call. And but yeah, I'm going to let you take us out here. Good. Next week, I'll be back for another one next Wednesday with
Yay.
A certain guest. And go plug your show now.
Oh. All right. Well, yeah, no, I've had a blast. It is always a good time to be on the show. Thank you, Sandy and Clayton, and everyone who called in. As always, y'all can follow me on Facebook for RG Westerman. You can follow me on Twitter at RG Westerman. You can follow me on Instagram and Flasher. And, of course, you can visit me at rgwesterman.com. And thanks for joining us. We will see you next time.